You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text no matter where you're listening. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. It's Thursday, so we have a jam-packed show coming your way. Our friend and colleague and host of Amicus, a law review across the network on Saturdays from 9 until 11. Jim Santel will be here after the 9:30 news. We will talk about the latest in the Judge Hannah Dugan case here in Milwaukee. Also, the Supreme Court is going to be hearing arguments about birthright citizenship.
Yeah, we talked about that early in the morning, and I had a question for Jeff Mandel of Law Forward. It was along the same lines we had the conversation with Judge Michelle yesterday.
So that's coming up after 9:30. In hour number two, we're going to talk a little bit about the plane. But then Brittany Merlot, Civic Media's meteorologist, multi-award winner, joining us at 10:20 for a little weather and wine. Journal Sentinel sports guru J.R. Ratcliffe joining us to talk all things sports after 10:30. And then we'll wrap up the show, as we always do, with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it's the Off the Top of My Head edition. So stick around for that. Lots of things coming up today. We wanted to start off, though. I noticed this morning as I was driving in the fog, which was really bad.
It was one of those fogs where, so there's a big, giant, lighted billboard, like a digital billboard on my way in. Mm-hmm. And it's big and it's bright. And it was one of those things where I couldn't see it at all. The lighted billboard itself, until I was like 100 feet away.
Away from it, yeah.
It was so dense.
Yeah, it was really thick. And we do have weather coming our way a little bit later on today. Mm-hmm. Brittany Merlot will give us an update about that next hour. But they're talking about very high winds and the potential for some strong thunderstorms. So just keep that in mind. I don't know if you're like me, but I've been getting some stuff outside and decorations outside. And I'll probably have to go home and take down all the things that I hung up yesterday.
This happens every year. Your flowers, right? You're like, I planted my flowers. They're freezing.
I know. Yeah. So, but yes, we have a little weather coming our way. But gas prices are up over $3.
Yeah.
Last time I filled up, it was like $2.79. And this morning as I was coming in, it was $3.09.
Yes, that's the one I saw.
I wasn't expecting that. I don't know why.
I mean, that honestly, that's, you know, once again, we're not going to blame the people in the big chair in the Oval, because as Mr. Global, Matt Randolph, has said, that has very little to do with anything. But I would love to have him back on to ask him about fluctuations. And I think he may have said that this is the time when gas is going to start to go up, because it's springtime, summertime,
and
travel.
It's heading into summer, yeah.
Love how they do that to us. But also, if we should be on the lookout for any deals happening now that will affect us down the road.
Later. So gas prices are up, and now, according to CNN, Walmart is warning it is going to be raising prices because of the tariffs. Walmart CEO Doug McMillon says, quote, "We'll do our best to keep our prices as low as possible. But given the magnitude of the tariffs, even at the reduced levels announced, we aren't able to absorb all the pressure given the reality of narrow retail margins. Higher tariffs will result in higher prices."
Jane, didn't he say lower prices on day one?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Pretty much.
Cool.
However, egg prices are down.
Yeah.
Egg prices are finally down. Egg prices fell 12.7% last month, the biggest monthly drop since 1984.
I mean, yeah, I've been looking at egg prices, and that's wonderful. And who do I at the White House give all the credit to? Is it the guy in the big chair? Is it Bobby Kennedy Jr.? I don't know. Why would egg prices drop, Jane?
The USDA says consumer prices finally fell as demand for eggs decreased.
Oh.
and avian flu cases have fallen.
So
it doesn't sound like there's anything that the Trump administration did that actually affected the price of eggs.
So it wasn't an executive order?
No.
He didn't yell at the birds?
Just his magical presence did not help lower the cost of eggs, even though he said, what, they were down 94%?
Yeah.
Which would make a dozen eggs like 35 cents?
Yeah.
They're still not 35 cents.
Isn't it awesome how sometimes you can just say words and they don't have to mean anything?
Yeah. Egg prices, though, still much higher now than they were before the latest bird flu outbreak. They cost 49.3% more last month than they did 1 year earlier. And eggs are also still more expensive than when Trump took office. Just wanted to throw that
just
in.
As my passive aggressive aunt would always say, just saying.
Well, it's a fact. That's just what that is. All right, we're going to move on to a hearing yesterday on Capitol Hill. The head of the Health and Human Services, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Oh boy,
was sort of answering questions, I guess.
Yeah.
Bob Jr. testifying before Congress for the first time as health secretary. And he said he does not think Americans should be, quote, taking medical advice from me. The head of Health and Human Services says, don't take advice from me. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Wait, no one should be taking advice from me either, Jane. Does that mean I can have the job?
You could be health. Yes.
Guys, it's been fun. This has been a great ride, but I got a job to get.
I've got more important things to do. In back-to-back appearances before House and Senate committees yesterday, Bob Kennedy Jr., a longtime critic of vaccination, also made clear he doesn't think the health secretary should be in the business of making vaccine recommendations. He also ducked questions about whether if his children were young today, he would still inoculate them against measles, chickenpox, or polio, because we know that all his kids are vaccinated.
Yes, they are. Yep. Yep. Yeah. I do believe we have a clip of Mark Pocan speaking to him.
Excellent.
About this matter specifically. And as Matt Rothschild said this morning with the clip, he said he was being Wisconsin nice.
Mark Pocan?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah, Calvin, do we have that clip? Let's play that clip, please.
Had a child today, would you vaccinate that child for measles?
For measles? Probably for measles. I what I would say is my opinions about vaccines are irrelevant. I've directed Jay Bhattacharya.
Sure. No, like I said, I don't want to.
So that everybody can make that decision. But I don't want to seem like I'm being evasive.
Yeah.
But I don't think people should be taking advice, medical advice from me.
Right, no, I got that. And I'm not asking you to give the medical advice, but would you vaccinate your child for measles?
I think if I answer that question directly, that it will seem like I'm giving advice to other people, and I don't want to be doing that. I want people to make
But that's kind of your jurisdiction, because CDC does give advice, right? I'm not trying to do it as a gotcha. It's just kind of...
What we're going to try to do is to lay out the pros and cons, the risks and benefits, accurately as we understand them with replicable studies.
Can you talk about chickenpox? Would you vaccinate your child against chickenpox?
I don't want to give advice. I can tell you in Europe they don't use the chickenpox vaccine specifically because the preclinical trial shows that when you inoculate the population for chickenpox, you get shingles in older people, which is more dangerous.
Just one last one, just a yes or no, please, if we could. Polio?
Polio? Again, I don't want to be giving advice.
That's fair.
Thanks. Thanks
like
for
I was not doing it as a gotcha.
Great. You're not an expert, and good.
A couple of things. One, he doesn't want to say yes or no to a question about his hypothetical children because he doesn't want people to see him as giving advice, even though for the past, I don't know how many decades, he's been going anywhere that they will listen to him, and he's been giving his advice, his very unjustified advice on various things. Also, you are evading the questions because you're not answering these questions. And third, and this was a one Google search victory for me, and I'm going to read verbatim, Yes, the chickenpox vaccine is given in Europe. In many European countries, it is included in national childhood vaccination schedules. Standalone varicella vaccines and combined MMRV vaccines, measles, mumps, rubella, and varicella, are available in various countries. So to just say they don't do it in Europe, I mean, and that's... I'm not qualified. I mean, wow.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing.
Wow.
Mr. Kennedy insisted that he had managed the growing measles outbreak better than counterparts in other nations. The measles outbreak, which started in West Texas, has killed two children and one adult, unvaccinated, and now more than 1,000 people in 30 states have the measles.
This was a thing that was, I don't want to say remedy. That's not the word I'm looking for. It was gone. It was gone.
We had eradicated measles.
That was the word. Yeah, we had eradicated.
In 2000, mm-hmm. we had eradicated measles, and now it's back.
It's back, and it's in states where I've seen Instagram videos of teachers, Jane, bragging that their kids aren't vaccinated. One school in Texas, it was a private school, and he was saying, we are the most unvaccinated school in Texas. And they were celebrating this as a school, not as the teachers, not as one guy. It was of the school. They were proud of this fact. And guess where the measles exploded in? Texas.
Texas. Oh, so, yeah. Mr. Kennedy has acknowledged vaccines are an effective way to prevent the spread of measles, but says people should be able to choose whether or not they get vaccinated. Instead, Kennedy has promoted alternative therapies, including cod liver oil, which contains vitamin A. That, in turn, is a remedy doctors said sickened some kids who took too much vitamin A. Mm-hmm. They were having liver problems.
Yeah, yeah. Because everyone also, let me rephrase it. I don't want to make a blanket statement like that. I believe when people hear vitamin whatever, A, B, C, or D, you know, you think it's, oh, it's a vitamin. It's good for me. I'll take a little bit more.
Sure.
But when you're taking so much of a vitamin that it's actually hurting you, and it's because people like him who is in a position of power, he's a Kennedy, he's the HHS secretary. I'm sorry, but you don't get to stand in front of Mark Pocan and say, well, I don't want to give advice.
Take advice from me.
That train left the station 25 years ago. People have been taking your advice and using you as their poster boy for defending against vaccines.
Yes.
And you're right. People should have the choice. They do have the choice, but they still should do it because they're just, the benefits are there.
Talk to older people who lived through polio. Talk to older people who had measles.
Yeah.
Which is more than just having spots all over your body.
Mm-hmm.
Having measles can lead to very, very, very severe consequences.
Yeah. Do you want your kids going through that? Let me rephrase that question. Why would you want your kids to possibly go through that?
When we have a safe and effective vaccine.
Is your point that great that you're going to sacrifice their safety? I don't understand it, Jane. But and
another thing I saw on social media not too long ago, you know, when they talk about the good old days, back in the day, we didn't have vaccines and it was just fine. Walk through a cemetery and look at the dates before 1960. And look at the number of children who died in infancy.
Yeah.
Or before they reached their second birthday. Just a thought.
Yeah.
You're looking for something to do this afternoon. When we return, Tammy Baldwin.
Spicy.
Getting a little spicy. That's on the way. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Welcome. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Dr. Slide on the board coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up after the 9:30 news, Jim Santel, friend, colleague, lawyer, and host of Amicus, a law review on Saturdays across the network from 9 to 11. He will be joining us. We'll talk about the Judge Hannah Dugan case, which there is action happening this morning.
Right now.
She just pled not guilty.
Yes, she entered that plea.
But we will be talking to Jim about that. Also, Supreme Court's going to be hearing arguments about birthright citizenship.
That's happening right this. He's listening to it right this moment.
Right this moment. So we will talk about that with him as well. Before we went to the break, we were talking about don't take medical advice from me, head of Health and Human Services, Bob Kennedy Jr. yesterday.
The guy who said, make America healthy again.
Yeah, but don't listen to me because I don't know what I'm talking about. He's got thoughts, but not advice.
Yeah, no.
No, because he doesn't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do. Brian from Milwaukee has been waiting. Good morning, Brian. Did you want to say something about this?
Yeah, I mean, what really shocks me is how the MAGA right are behind all of Trump's appointees, including Kennedy, Jr. And for example, I think I stated this before, I have a friend who I've known most of my life since, elementary school. One of her sons is autistic, and she's screaming for, autistic research, yet she's a MAGA right supporter who also supports everything that they're doing, like polling, and defunding autistic research. And a lot of us called her out on it and said, honey, you can't have it both ways because, either you're a mega Trump supporter or you're going to support your son. Which one is it?
Mm.
And, what a lot of us have been saying is, what is it going to take for the mega right to wake up? How bad does it have to get until they go, oh my God, we need to stand up against this, how much worse does this have to get?
Well, unfortunately, Brian, I think in some cases, until it affects her personally and her child personally, she's not going to change. When you asked her, how can you have this both ways? How did she respond to that?
There was no comment on Facebook from her about it.
She had no response.
And thank you very much, Brian.
Thanks,
for calling.
Brian.
And that's a lot. I mean, we get that, and I get that on social media and the text lines where you respond back with verified information, and there's no. And that's the thing is, we want the conversation. Tell us why you support these things when they can have a detrimental effect. And absolutely, Jane, that's exactly the words I was going to say. It's not going to affect people's opinions until, and unfortunately, it might have disastrous consequences for them. So.
We're seeing this with some Trump supporters who are married to immigrants.
Yeah. Yes.
Who are getting deported.
Yes. And there's still I can't remember the exact details, but a woman was held up. She was put away, put in jail for being illegally here because she had overstayed her visa. And after it was all said and done, she was released. They were reunited. They both defended the policies. So maybe, Jane, we're wrong. It's not even that case and I don't like saying this often, but it really does beg the question of, okay, is this actually cultish behavior? Because when you cannot turn your back on dear leader, even when it has affected you like that, what will it take?
It's a very good question. Tammy Baldwin, going back to yesterday,
yeah,
just briefly, Tammy Baldwin was talking to, again, don't take my medical advice, the Health of Human Services, Bob Kennedy Jr., about lead.
Yeah.
And the lead problem in Milwaukee public schools. We've shut down 6 schools, 1,800 kids displaced because of lead problems in these schools. Do we have time to play that clip, Calvin?
We have 2 of them.
We have 2. Let's play that first clip from Tammy Baldwin, if we could, please.
Secretary Kennedy, I want to start with what I hope is an easy question for you. Do you think lead poisoning in children is a significant concern?
Is lead poisoning?
A significant concern.
It's a extremely significant concern.
Thank you. then I would like to know why your department has effectively shut down the very program to address lead poisoning in children. The city of Milwaukee requested assistance from the CDC to help the city respond to lead poisoning cases tied to public schools. Six schools have been closed, displacing more than 1,800 school children.
That's a lot of kids.
The request for federal assistance was denied because of lack of staff. The entire childhood lead poisoning branch has been fired. In the words of a Milwaukee mom, it really sends a message of, you don't matter. I don't know what you would say to parents who must now test their children for lead and deal with school closures, but do you intend to eliminate this branch at CDC, yes or no?
No, we do not.
Okay. Because you cannot tell us that you want to make America healthy again when you are willfully destroying programs that keep children safe and healthy from lead poisoning. Congress dedicated $51 million in funding for this particular program. But when a community asks for help to prevent lifelong complications for children, and there is no one there to pick up the phone, and it's not because this program is ineffective, it's because you fired the entire team whose job it is to support communities like Milwaukee.
There was, in that video, there's a person wearing a Make America Healthy Again hat, and what we were just talking about, I want to know what that person's thinking as they're hearing this information. If their belief is to make it all healthy, how does that affect their thinking on the topics then? That's what I want to know.
We have news coming up next, and then when we return, we're going to talk all things law with Jim Santel. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm going back.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. It's Thursday, and you heard that little Dave Brubeck take five leading into us. That means Jim Santel is here, our friend, colleague, and host of Amicus, a law review Saturdays from 9 to 11 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Also a former U.S. attorney and an acting attorney, which is why we like to say we are attorney adjacent here at Matt Nair on Air. But lots of things to talk about, Jim. I wanted to talk, first of all, about the case with Judge Hannah Dugan here in Milwaukee.
Yes, absolutely.
So there were some developments even already this morning.
Absolutely. So she appeared this morning in Federal District Court, 517 East Wisconsin Avenue. That's the federal courthouse. That's the Eastern District of Wisconsin. Once again, a federal prosecution following the return by the grand jury a day or so ago of an indictment against her. Nothing surprising about that. Constitution says if you're going to be charged federally, you got to be charged by an indictment. That's what she is responding to. For those who are into the nice procedural aspects of this, it means the government does not have to go forward with a probable cause hearing this morning. This is, again, just in the form of an arraignment and a plea. She has pled not guilty to both counts. The judge setting up some scheduling on what goes forward here. The case has been assigned to Judge Lynn Edelman, who is a federal district court judge. And now we're off. And that includes the other significant thing that you're making reference to, Jane, is the filing very immediately after this grand jury indictment of a motion to dismiss.
Right. Now, some tidbits I've been seeing on the web, Jim, have said that Judge Dugan and her legal team are taking something right out of a Trump playbook.
Yes.
As far as using something that they used essentially for their own defense.
Absolutely.
Can you explain that?
It just drips from the 4 or 5 page motion. It is readable. It's accessible. And one of the two arguments that they're making, Jane, based upon this motion, which the judge will now need to address, the government can respond to this as well, is that she is immune from prosecution. Shouldn't even begin this prosecution. We're not going to talk about the substance of what happened here with the defendant in front of her. She is immune from prosecution. That, of course, is exactly what the president alleged when he was before the Supreme Court. We got that opinion of about, what, 11 months ago, saying, yes, presidents enjoy immunity, can't be diverted by things like criminal prosecutions.
Right.
They're invoking subtly and not so subtly that same concept to say she is a Wisconsin Circuit Court judge. She is responsible for presiding over matters in her court. She is immune, therefore, from these kinds of challenges.
Because it's federal.
Exactly, right?
Okay.
And that's actually much related to the second argument, which is also federal government, stay out of this. This is a state matter. Mm-hmm. That's their second argument. It's federalism. This is a matter for the state courts to address, not you. And again, they are compelling. They are creative arguments. Everybody's looking at this thinking, gee, we were anticipating pushback on the substance and things like whether the statute applies to this conduct. That will probably come. More motions can come down the road. This attacks on both of those grounds, the immunity issue, the federalism issue, right out of the gate, whether court should even begin to proceed over this. Stop this now. We don't have to get to substance. Judge, shut this down. That's why it's very aggressive. It's very creative. It's intellectually fascinating. It'll be interesting to see what Judge Edelman does with this.
So there is a potential right now that this could all get dismissed.
It is entirely possible. Again, you've got Judge Edelman, who has always been very creative and very open to these kinds of things. He issued some opinions years ago that changed the way that we think about the sentencing guidelines in America across the board. This is a judge who's not afraid to seize upon not novel theories, but theories that are prompting us to think about what we're doing. And he is not afraid to issue those kinds of decisions. And again, the process here is that the motion is now filed. The government has a chance to respond to all this. That will happen. But don't be surprised if Judge Edelman then at some point, not this week, not even next week, but maybe in a month or so, maybe a couple months from now, either has a hearing on this, kind of an oral argument on it, or he decides the case, the motion, even as it presently stands. He could also lump this into other motions that the defense will also file about the statute, about the substance of this. But this is a judge, again, drawn just randomly in the process, who has been open to these kinds of things and would not be afraid to do this if he thinks that justice demands it.
I got the petty side of me. Mm-hmm. I really love how they're using 10th Amendment,
yes.
a tactic that the GOP has used for, or that side has used for hundreds of years now, to say, get out of our way, get out of our lives. We don't need you.
Right.
And now they're saying, yeah, you don't. But also the question I have, Jim, and this is like, this goes back to a really basic thing. Like, we're not, like we said, we're not lawyers, but the story we've read is that this seems, on its face, from all the details that we've gotten from the stories we've read, is nothing happened. She led him out a door to a publicly accessible hallway. He passed ICE agents, traveled down an elevator with an ICE agent, and then they arrested him outside. She didn't partake in any nefarious plan. She didn't open up a door in her chambers that's a secret pole in there that leads him out the back alley and he could run away. She just literally said, go out that way. I mean, am I wrong in saying that?
Right. And I think that's exactly what you're going to hear in this case. That certainly could be the trial presentation to a jury, right? That's, you make the argument, Greg. You are an attorney here, right? And you make that argument that there's nothing to see here. But it also goes, even before that, your very good points, to the issue of whether or not under the statutes, there are these two statutes, obstructing and then impeding the proceedings generally here, do the facts of this case, which are still mostly set out in that complaint, do they support a legitimate prosecution under those statues. To your point, is there something really to see here? Do these statues really contemplate criminalizing that conduct, which, as you've argued here, there nothing happened here? That can also be a pretrial motion to say, let's take all the facts as true. Mm-hmm. Let's maintain that the government's position on what happened here, plainly Hannah Dugan and her attorneys do not maintain that. Let's assume that the government is accurate and complete about all this. Even so, to the way that you just described it, Greg, under the statute, does this state an offense? And if not, that's also a basis upon which Judge Adelman could say, you know what? Very interesting facts here. They don't articulate an offense. No conduct here that's punishable by prosecutable under the federal statute. I'm going to dismiss it. That's another motion. It's related to what we've got here, but it underscores the great many things that the defense attorneys can present long before this gets to trial. And that's a long ways away.
That is a long ways away. If you're just joining us, Jim Santel is our guest, our friend and colleague, and the host of Amicus, a law review Saturdays across the network from 9 until 11. I have a question for you, Jim. Just in general, when it comes to court cases and things like this, why do things take so long?
Yes, yeah. Man.
Why does it take long? Yes, because you said even in this instance, Judge, it could be a month. It could be 2 months.
We saw this with the Donald Trump prosecutions, right, Jane, as well, that we indicted. And the question was, well, gee, we'll go to trial. Those cases, with the exception of New York, never went to trial. And even there, a couple of years later, in the federal system, and this will prompt all of your listeners once again to roll their eyes, there's something called the Speedy Trial Act. And it says within 70 days of appearing, you've got to go to trial. It's a due process thing, once again. Yeah. Your interests and the defense interests and an expedited proceeding. There are all kinds of exceptions to that. Motions pending that tolls the passage of that time. The judge can explain and declare that this is a complex matter, all kinds of things. And so even within the statutory obligation to get it to trial, judges have great discretion to postpone it. They do want to get it right. They do want to make certain that the defense has a full opportunity to present its case. The prosecution, the same thing. All of that takes time. Even so, I share very much your concern. As a prosecutor for 30 years, there were times when I was also not too concerned about in terms of fundamental constitutional interests, but just in the interest of getting this done, let the public know what the result is, that kind of interest, which should be at the top of the list. I, too, shared that when we had another delay based upon witness unavailability, but some discovery that's not produced. It all, in the end, is to the benefit of the entire system because you're not moving too quickly through the entire process.
Or something is going to get missed.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But it is a legitimate concern.
One of the things that's discussed about this case, because it is it was a major headline across the country, is the chilling effect it would have for how judges could possibly be arrested and prosecuted. I'm thinking about the other side of the idea, though. Let's say it goes all the way through, it's dismissed, there was no evidence, there's nothing wrong, and the judge is like, there's no reason to go forward, and dismisses the case outright. I don't want to say chilling effect, but what does that inspire for other people who want to try to do the same thing? Because we talk about it's sending a message to judges. Well, if Judge Adelman dismisses it outright on basis of no evidence, what does that say to those who are like, well, I guess we can't really go. If we're going to go after judges, we have to do more than what we just did here. Right. It's not going to be a slam dunk because this case right here on its face just seems like it has nothing to offer, but they want so bad to put a judge in jail.
Messaging in all directions, right?
Yes.
Not just to the public, not just to a defendant, but also to the prosecution. You have to believe that right now the Department of Justice, including the U.S. Attorney's Office, right up the street here from where we are here in Racine, is looking at this and thinking, gosh, if indeed this does get dismissed early on or even later on any of these motions by Judge Adelman, as an aside, highly likely under that circumstance that this Department of Justice would appeal that to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, the government, because jeopardy hasn't attached. You do get that right to pursue that. And this Department of Justice probably would do so. But let's assume that even the Seventh Circuit says, yes, Judge Adelman is right in dismissing this case. If he does that, it does send a message. Do these things reverberate and main justice? You bet they do. I've been there physically and geographically. I've been there in the U.S. Attorney's Office. Major decisions like like this. There are meetings, there are memorandums written. What do we do about the future? How do we prosecute these cases in the future, Greg, as you just said? What are the facts that we need? It's plainly got to be something more than this.
More substantive.
It sends a strong message to the government prosecution and to the investigators as well. You may see a lot of things unless you've got something more compelling. At least under these statutes, it is not enough, if indeed this is where that case goes.
It's a lot to absorb.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
I'm so glad you're here, because when we talk about motions and appeals and double appeals, I feel like we're playing poker, and it's like ante up, and then now I call, and now it's a double call, and now I'm an ante again.
And then I'm like, you want to watch some dog videos?
Right. Here's this cute thing my cat did this morning.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
We're going to continue our conversation with Jim Santel, and we are also going to talk about action that is arguments that are happening right now before the U.S. Supreme Court regarding birthright citizenship. That is all on the way. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We will be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Gal B on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Wherever you are listening, you can always join us. Call or text. It's the same number. It's 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. And just a reminder, tomorrow, we got your baseball tickets, baby. You have a chance to pick up a four-pack of tickets to see the Milwaukee Brewers joining us tomorrow. Join us tomorrow starting at 9 a.m. We'll have a keyword for you to text in via the Civic Media app for this statewide text to win contest. You'll have 2 hours to text in the word that we give you. You've got five chances over the course of the day, starting with Pat Kreitlow, mornings with Pat Kreitlow, then Matt Nair on Air, Tom Hartman 11 to 2, Todd Alba 2 to 4, and Maggie Dawn from 4 to 6. Tomorrow, be listening for those keywords. Again, five chances to pick up a four-pack of tickets to see our great Milwaukee Brewers. He is our colleague here at Civic Media. He hosts Amicus, a law review, on Saturdays from 9 to 11. Jim Santel is here. And, Jim, we have arguments going on before the Supreme Court right now regarding birthright citizenship, which is something that has been part of our Constitution since the late 1800s.
In the wake of the Civil War, we had as a nation to figure out, what do we do with all the people who are slaves? What is their status? And to the credit of this nation at the time, the United States Congress and the requisite number of states said they should be citizens. Now, we know the history that followed that was plainly very, very full of tumult, and we still continue to wrestle with the challenges for citizenship for everyone in this nation. But the reality is that that's what prompted the 14th Amendment. We think about the 14th Amendment in the context of the other major concepts there, equal protection, right, due process, all those things. That's where you normally think about it. President Trump issues this executive order first day of office and basically says, oh, wait a minute, let's rethink whether or not birthright citizenship, that is, if you are a person and you are born here in the geography of the United States, some exceptions, but principally that is it, you are a citizen.
Regardless of the legal status of your parents.
Exactly, Jane. And that's what he says. He says, oh, wait a minute, there's this other piece of language inside the 14th Amendment says, talking about subject to the jurisdiction of the nation. All right, of the courts and of the country generally. And what Donald Trump says, wait a minute. If you are a son or daughter of a woman who is illegally here or temporarily here, even if your status is legal,
protected,
but you're temporary
here,
status. then in fact, 14th Amendment doesn't apply. And even though you were born geographically here, you are not a citizen. And that's what his executive order says. There have been courts around the country that have taken up challenges of this. Every single one of them has said, no, Mr. President, that's wrong. That's not how this has gone forward. For what it's worth, there's precedent. Yes, again, 19th century, 1898, United States versus Wong Kim Ark. The Supreme Court already said, yes, a man who's born in San Francisco to Chinese parents is a citizen. This has been resolved, everybody, right? Right?
But they want a carve out for this.
Yeah. And we want a carve out now. And so again, it's premised upon this notion, well, if your mother was not legally here or temporarily here, then you're not a citizen. And the other thing that's going on right now, based upon the early argument, is they're addressing that, but they're also addressing this larger issue, as large as that is, about nationwide injunctions. That is when one federal judge says, I'm finding that indeed this can or cannot happen, and I'm making it applicable across the nation, right? Hmm. And again, it applies in both directions. Here's the one that I think about. You both remember, your listeners remember, a judge named Kaczmarek, who basically shut down mifepristone a number of years ago, right? Northern Texas, one judge made it a national injunction, right? And again, the issue, good for the goose, good for the gander, right? They're wrestling right now with whether or not individual federal district court judges like Kaczmarek, like ones in this case as well, other situations should have that power. Should an appeals court from which these decisions are taken, should they have the power? Ultimately, the notion is, of course, Supreme Court will resolve all this, but that issue of national impact of what a singular federal judge does is looming almost bigger right now than is the birthright citizenship inside this argument as it takes place right now as we're on the air.
And I know this is a much bigger discussion we can have, but we spoke to Judge Paul Michel yesterday in the first hour, and we talked about habeas corpus and the suspension therein of that part of due process. And the notion is, if you can't suspend it for some, you suspend it for all. If they get rid of birthright citizenship, they succeed. This affects everyone.
Well, and then we're going to have to go retroactive.
Absolutely. Right? And this is the other argument that, again, you've got a couple of lawyers. One of them is the Solicitor General from one of the states. One of those is a professor from Georgetown. They will also argue, I anticipate, that you're opening up the proverbial Pandora's box can of worms. Do you really want to go down this path where now you're examining what your birth lineage is, and where was your mother? Where was your father? And going back and addressing not just those folks that Donald Trump would like to throw out of this nation, but frankly, Greg, to your point, everybody, right? And can that be a potential impact of lessening the clear statement of what the 14th Amendment's all about?
Was Ivana Trump a citizen when she gave birth to her three children?
Not Barron. Oh, Ivana. Sorry.
I'm just curious.
And again, the fact that we're scratching our heads, Jane, okay, let's think about all these circumstances where, again, and this is the big one, right? Your mother is legally here. She's here on a student visa. She's got some other employment situation. Nobody's maintaining that she's illegally here. And she gives birth in Wisconsin, in New Jersey, in Florida. My guess is that there are an awful lot of people who are alive today, citizens in our good community who are in that status. And now they are no longer in that protected class.
Join Jim Santel Saturdays from 9 to 11 across the network for Amicus, a law review. Thank you so very much, Jim.
Always
we'll
a pleasure, my
week.
Friends.
News is coming up next. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community.
Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.